Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my stay-at-home husband, Miko Alon.
Hi guys.
Thank you everyone so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show talking all about current events. There's a lot going on in this country. Mostly we're going to talk about the coronavirus. We'll talk a little bit about politics as well. Then we're going to move on to the new vegan product segment. Today we'll be tasting the brand new X Burger by Worthington. Another new vegan burger. We're going to try that live on the show. And then, of course, we'll close out the show with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at VeganAri. Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag VeganAriShow. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And I just want to say, I hope that everyone who is listening is safe and healthy and well. This is a scary time right now in this country and across the world. So I just want to extend our well wishes to all of you. I hope everyone is staying at home and just taking care of yourselves. I was going to say and one another, but we're not supposed to be with other people. So just taking care of yourself and staying safe and healthy. Now, Miko, let's get into it. There's a lot to cover. I think, like I said, we're going to, the opening segment, we're going to talk mostly about the coronavirus. So just some numbers to start this opening segment. 2 weeks ago when we did the show, there were less than 500 cases in the United States. Last week, there was just a little bit more than 3,300 cases in the United States. Right now, and we're recording this on Sunday the 22nd, there are just less than 40,000 cases in the United States, a lot of them in New York, specifically New York City. And I think one of the reasons why we're having such an explosion of cases is that we actually are starting to get tests that we were promised weeks ago. And this number, I believe, is expected to keep ballooning as we test more people and, quite frankly, as the virus spreads. We know now that the virus was here for weeks before we really started taking strong measures to try and curtail the spread. I think we're at a point now where we're putting restrictions in place, really, I mean, just in the last week, that are supposed to flatten the curve. So when we were recording the show last week, I don't think LA was under like strict lockdown or anything yet, but in the last week, the entire state of California, the entire state of New York, New Jersey, Illinois, other states are joining this this safety in place, they're calling it, to try and flatten the curve. We now have 1/5 of the American population under these restrictions. What do you think? I mean, what are our hopes at this point? And we'll talk about, the federal government's handling of this and Trump in just a second. But what do you make of all this so far?
I mean, I'm very glad that several states have taken proactive steps. I think the entire country, frankly, should be under a lockdown if you want to seriously flatten the curve. I think that what makes the situation exponentially worse are Donald Trump's Happy Talk press conferences, which I think for a lot of the country who may either be his supporters or remember a bygone era when you could trust what the president of the United States says during a press briefing, seem to think that everything's fine because he keeps repeating things like, oh, we have millions of tests, we have millions of masks, we have ventilators going everywhere, everything is fine. And the opposite is almost always the truth of what he's saying. We sometimes have our, CDC officials there to give some resemblance of facts, but I don't think Americans, unfortunately, the ones who aren't under lockdown orders, are not still, we see evidence every day. They're not taking this seriously enough, but I think the tragic reality is going to come to view very clearly very soon.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I don't think that a lot of people I think some people are taking this seriously and are really trying to stay at home and only go out for essentials or, you know, a walk around the neighborhood or whatever. But I'll just speak anecdotally. I mean, Miko and I are runners. We run several times a week. We went out for a run yesterday and we just run around the reservoir here in Silver Lake. There were people picnicking, congregating, playing sports. Like, I was horrified by it because I'm going, like, literally, it was just as busy as it would be any other weekend, if not more. And so that scares me. I mean, I also heard, and I'm just speaking locally now because this is where we live, but, you know, Runyon Canyon was very busy. Temescal Canyon was very busy. These are places where people hike. And I get it. We live in a big city. There's millions of people. It, you know, people want to get out. They're probably, you know, stir crazy and whatever. But I think at the same time, to be congregating like that and not keeping that 6-foot distance, that social distancing that we keep hearing about, is really irresponsible. And I'm not even going there with what we saw this week in Florida with the spring breakers and those idiots going out to restaurants and bars and clubs. I mean, that was just so fucking stupid and irresponsible. So I don't know. I think that we could be facing a situation eventually where we do what they did in Italy and Spain, which is lock down everything, like no public parks, no whatever, because if people aren't going to respect these restrictions that governors and mayors are telling us to do, then I don't know. I think that it might come down as, you know, no, you can't be trusted. We're going to have to just lock this shit down totally.
I mean, it'll be fascinating to see, because as we talked about last week, this crisis has really exposed a lot of the illusions of the American society and all the things that we're constantly always told are great. You know, it's one thing for Italy or France to put the country on a strict lockdown where everyone's medical care is provided for. I mean, there's, you know, very tragic and horrible. In Italy, the care system is completely overwhelmed, but at least the care is paid for. And France has announced that they will pay, you know, people's salaries. Here, it's going to be a completely uncharted future. I've read now that if you don't have insurance currently, because there's no congressional bill to do otherwise, the cost, if you have, if you contract the coronavirus and get very ill, the hospital bill for that is about $35,000. Apparently, even if you have insurance, the average bill is about $9,000, which are obviously enormous expenditures for anyone to try to endure.
Especially at a time where so much of the country is now out of work.
Right. I was just going to say that. And here, I keep, you know, we don't yet know the shape of the economic aid package to ordinary Americans. But the thing I read this morning was that the new Republican proposal, I think, was roughly like a one-time payment of $1,200. And I think that comes from Donald Trump's sort of, this is something else was being reported yesterday, that the federal government is considering apparently a nationwide sort of shelter-in-place order for 2 weeks. 2 weeks isn't going to cut it. And I think the other thing that people don't understand is that the longer people continue to violate these orders, the longer this situation is going to endure. We realistically are looking, I think, at 2 months of mandatory social distancing. And that means that a lot of people's workplaces are going to be closed. People are going to lose their jobs. People, you know, we know that Americans, you know, many people, an extra expenditure of $500 is a disaster. And the federal government, really, this needs to be the time when the Democrats hold firm and do not allow these proposed packages that just bail out corporations and leave ordinary people in the dust. Because otherwise, we're going to see a Great Depression, the likes of which we have never experienced in the United States.
I agree. You can't tell people that, oh, we're gonna defer your rent payment, you know, whatever, your car payment, whatever it is, your payments. And you don't have a job because of this coronavirus. You can't just say, oh, but we'll give you the next 6 months to pay off, you know, what we deferred during the lockdown. Well, if you weren't making any money, how are you ever going to catch up when 40% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck? You can't. So I think that there needs to be a serious discussion, or else you're right. We are going to see an economic catastrophe because of people defaulting on payments, on mortgages, of people. I mean, we that is not sustainable. And so I don't know what this package is going to look like that they're working on, the stimulus package. I've heard that it's a $2 trillion package. You hear a lot about, you know, them giving money to industries like the airline industry and whatnot. But I think that we need to be talking about everyday Americans and how this is really affecting so many people who are out of work right now. And I think if this crisis really highlights two things that are very, very wrong with the American system, it's that number one, we don't have universal healthcare, which is something that every other advanced nation has. And number two, that we don't have guaranteed paid sick leave, which is also something that every other advanced nation has. I don't understand how this country can defend not having those two safety nets for American citizens. It is going to make this crisis that much worse unless we deal with it. And that means not charging people $35,000 fucking dollars because they have the coronavirus. That's absolutely absurd and completely unsustainable. None of those bills are going to get paid. I mean, I'm sorry. People don't have $35,000 to pay for treatment. So what are you going to say? You're not going to treat people? I did a calculation this week on my own because I was thinking about the 30 million Americans who are not insured in this country. And I did this at the rate of $500 per month for health insurance, which I think is pretty average for the country. And what it came out to is that the United States, in order to insure those 30 million Americans, would have to spend $180 billion a year. When we're talking about stimulus packages to the tune of $2 trillion to bail out the wealthiest companies, are we really going to try and defend as a country that we can't afford $180 billion a year to make sure that the 30 million Americans who are at the lowest end in terms of income, that they're not taken care of for their health care? That's an absolute disgrace. It's a disgrace.
You know what I would do if I was Nancy Pelosi? I would be rolling back the $3 trillion tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires and putting that $3 trillion directly into the Americans most at need.
I mean,
cut it off at certain income levels. You don't need aid the way that people who make virtually no money do. Like, we need to, the what's so tragic about this is that Donald Trump and the Republicans are only interested in the 24-hour press cycle. And what they're saying today, things are great, we did this, we did that. They have no view of what's going to happen a month from now or 2 months from now or a year from now. And the entire economy, in addition to the horrible health situation, is careening off the cliff right now.
I mean, I think it really says something about us as a country when, and this has happened a couple times in just my lifetime, where we have an economic crash and these companies go to the government and say, bail us out. And the government does. And, you know, sometimes that money is paid back. Like, I think when they bailed out the car companies in 08, the car companies paid it back. But I think it's really something when these big multi-billion-dollar companies go to the federal government and ask for help when shit gets bad for them. What about everyday Americans who go into debt because they've been diagnosed with an illness like cancer? Where are they supposed to go? How come everyday Americans can't go to the government and say, hey, this unexpected thing has happened and now I am facing financial ruin. Please help me out. You know what those people are told? Those people are told, go start a GoFundMe. That's what those people are told. And I think it's time for that to fucking change.
Yes. And you know who should be ineligible for any stimulus money are all the companies that made billions of dollars in profit and paid zero in taxes. You have the money to cover for yourself. You've been hoarding it.
I mean, also, you know, we're going to talk about how we're going to pay for, you know, some of this stuff. But what about Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax? I was thinking about that this week. Now, at the time, when she was putting forth this idea of a wealth tax, she was saying that anyone who made more than, I think it was $50 million a year,
yeah,
had to pay 1% of that wealth in taxes, which is nothing for these people. I mean, come on. I think it should be a whole hell of a lot more than 1%. And I think that we should really look at the people who have, like Jeff Bezos, quite frankly. He is worth $120 billion. Are we fucking kidding ourselves? Are we saying that these people, where are all these people during this crisis? What is Jeff Bezos doing to help out? What is Mark Zuckerberg doing to help out financially? What are these people doing?
Can I point out that Amazon announced that they were donating $1 million to coronavirus aid? That is a laughably small amount of money from a company that makes billions of dollars in profit.
That's like me and you giving 50 cents.
Yeah, and pays no taxes. By comparison, the actor Ryan Reynolds donated $1 million. Like, where is that level of generosity from the billionaires? Where is Mark Zuckerberg's? I mean, I know Facebook is doing some things. These people should be, who have been hoarding, you know, astronomical sums of money for themselves, should really be paying now back to society.
100%. Now, Miko, do you want to talk about your thoughts on all these celebrities recording themselves singing on social media? I know you had a lot to say about that this week.
You know, this is the thing. I really genuinely do appreciate anything people are doing to try to provide comfort. But celebrities have an enormous platform in our society. And what they should all be using it for right now is to pressure public officials and, frankly, shame those public officials who are not taking action to get us into a national stay-at-home state. The singing of Imagine isn't doing anything. I'm sorry, but it's not. I know that there was another celebrity couple who recorded something, and at least they were singing about staying at home. But celebrities, if you're listening, please use your platform when there is still time to flatten the curve and demand action from state governors everywhere.
Yeah, I saw something this week that one of the, I think Kylie Jenner, I don't know, one of the Kardashians, she posted this selfie of herself, you know, all glammed up and being like, what movie should I watch? And I was like, girl, come on. Like, you have incredible influence. You're ridiculously famous. She's a billionaire. Do you know she has $1 billion? And I'm like, and this is what you're doing? You have a platform right now. Like, why? I don't know. Call your fucking senator, your congressperson, like, raise awareness. I whatever. Anyway, that's okay. Maybe we shouldn't go down that road. I mean, but I'm just saying.
I have nothing nice to say about her.
You know, if you do have, you know, any level of influence like that, yeah, there's other ways, I think, to channel that besides just posting selfies of yourself, you know. Well, anyway.
You could also imagine what it would do if one of these celebrities said, you know, in my home state, the governor has not done anything.
Right.
Here's the phone number. Here's the email.
Exactly.
Call them. You could. That's how you mobilize action in this country.
Exactly. Now, I want to talk about something else this week. I don't think we talked about this last week, that Trump, and there's a lot to talk about there. We'll get through all of this. But one of the things that's really upset me this week is that he seems to have shifted his vocabulary when he speaks about the coronavirus. And he's very specifically saying China virus. In fact, there was a staff photographer at, I think, the Washington Post who took a picture of his notes when he was giving one of these press conferences. And he specifically crossed out Corona and wrote China virus in. And I have to talk about this because I believe, and I've now heard and read from several sources, that this is stoking violence and hatred towards innocent Asian Americans living in our country. This is fucking wrong. A virus does not have a nationality. It doesn't have an ethnicity. A virus is a fucking virus. This isn't, like, look, I'm not talking about the government of China. We can talk about that another time. I know there was a cover-up there. I'm not talking about that. But I'm saying this is not a problem of China or of Italy or of what. This is a human problem. And I think that when Trump does that, saying China virus, not only is he inciting violence and hatred towards a minority in America, I think he's also trying to do it to deflect blame from himself. And he's doing what all racists do, which is scapegoating. And I think, you know, he was asked this week at one of these press conferences, do you take responsibility? And of course he said no, which is just unbelievable. I mean, my God, that's just, it's just, to me, it's insane.
That was actually the previous week. And he said, I don't take any responsibility. He was this week given the most softball question about what would you say to Americans who are scared, and literally attacked Peter Alexander, the NBC reporter, for asking it and said, you're a terrible reporter. Why are you sensationalizing just by giving facts? What everyone should understand is that Trump is never going to take responsibility nor ever admit that anything went wrong. We learned this week when Trump's new thing is nobody could have foreseen this, even though he just said that he knew it was also a pandemic before anyone else did. But somehow his supporters hold those two contradictory thoughts in their heads at the same time. But we know that the intelligence community, every agency, as they say, like dashboards were blinking red that the coronavirus crisis was coming, and he did nothing. He paralyzed our federal response. And so now he's trying to, rather than taking responsibility for that, he's trying to blame China.
Yeah.
He is now shifting blame to governors when the federal government's response has completely failed. We found out that he has, not only has he refused to invoke the Defense Production Act that would enable states to buy things, you know, not maybe not at cost, but don't have to pay profits to companies.
It does protect against price gouging and stuff like
that. He's refused to do that. He has been outbidding states. Like the federal response has been a catastrophe, and now he's trying to blame the governors for the failures.
And China.
He will blame his own supporters in the end. He will never take responsibility for anything. And it is time that his supporters, it really is a matter of life and death to them now, to start waking the fuck up.
And I think that in doing that, he just proves that he has no honor, no morality. I mean, he's just totally an empty shell. He's got no ethics. But I think, you know, I've heard from people in my family who I speak to, you know, they're saying, oh, you know, no, like liberals are being too sensitive about this China fight. And I'm like, no, this is not about liberals being too sensitive. This is about inciting violence and hatred towards innocent Americans. This is fucked up. And when the president uses certain language, it has ripple effects. Look at the El Paso shooting. No one really talks about that anymore. But in that, white supremacist terrorists' manifesto was literally language lifted from Trump's speeches. His hatred towards Mexicans and towards people immigrating at our southern border, lifted from his speeches and put. So I'm just saying, like, when you're the president of the United States, you have a responsibility to protect all Americans. And when you use language like that, you're absolutely targeting innocent people for hatred and violence. And I'm sorry, I have to say something about it because I think it's absolutely disgusting.
For sure. And we can be angry at the Chinese government's attempt at a cover-up and recognize that the Chinese people are also victims of that.
And
look at, if you're going to be angry about a cover-up, look at the cover-up inside our own government. Look at what happened when we now know that on January 24th, United States senators were given a briefing on the catastrophe to come. Four Republican senators, while publicly spouting happy talk about how this is going to be all handled and it was going to be perfect, privately, there was one senator who held a little luncheon and cautioned all his wealthy donors that shit was going to hit the fan. And then these people started selling their stocks in very clear insider trading. So there was, in addition to that, Donald Trump's obvious cover-up, calling it a hoax, even though he had been briefed too, early January, and the dashboard was blinking red. There was a cover-up not that dissimilar here, and that we're living with the consequences of.
I think we need to be very careful when we distinguish between the Chinese government and then people living in China, Chinese people. I mean, we have to remember that there were brave doctors and others in China, knowing that their government was trying to cover it up, who was trying to get the word out to the rest of the world. And they were using WeChat and stuff and trying to find creative ways to do that, because there's obviously a lockdown on internet usage in China. So let's just be clear. Let's not do that. Let's not say, oh, it's this country's fault that, you know, there's plenty. When all this is said and done and we look at this, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of blame to go around. And you're right. I looked at something. There was a headline in, I think it was USA Today, and it was the day that Kobe Bryant died back in January. And literally the headline was like Kobe Bryant on one side, and then the other side, they were talking about the coronavirus and the rise of the virus in China. We knew about it. There's an excellent piece in The Atlantic. If you want to, I wish I could think of the name of it, but it goes through, it's a very long and detailed article that goes through how we failed in terms of testing. Back in, they said if we really wanted to have gotten a handle on this, we could have done this back in February. We did not have tests. We did not take it seriously. We had a president who was going around telling everybody that, like you said, it was a Democratic hoax, telling everybody that soon the number would go down to zero, telling people that it would magically go away, downplaying it, I think in large part to try and safeguard his reelection chances and to try not to scare the stock market from plummeting, which it already has now. And so there was a lot of mistakes made here as well. And so anyway, I feel like Joe Biden. Anyway, but yeah, I said.
No, and one final point, which is that a lot of people also, since we know now that this virus came from bats, obviously are attacking the fact that in Wuhan, people were eating bats. If you don't think that we have a ticking time bomb in our factory farms of antibiotic resistant strains of disease and superbugs, you're deluding yourself there too.
100%. That's very important to bring up. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago on the show. People pointing to these wet markets and saying like, oh, it's, you know, that's, let me tell you something. We might not have wet markets in the United States. There are wet markets all over the world. Here, we certainly have live markets and we have factory farms. And those farms breed disease. There have been antibiotic resistant strains of MRSA that come from factory farms. There have been antibiotic resistant strains of E. coli. It is very largely believed that the 1918 flu pandemic came from a farm in Kansas. I mean, they didn't have factory farms back then, but still. So I'm just saying that if you don't think, like Miko said, that we're sitting on a ticking time bomb, do your research. Do you know that 80% of all antibiotics produced in the United States are fed to farmed animals? We need to get a handle on this situation or else the next big outbreak could be from us.
Right. And the other thing to consider is this prophylactic use of antibiotics is literally destroying the available antibiotics in the world because diseases become resistant to it. We have fewer and fewer numbers of antibiotics at work. And that is going to spell a whole different kind of disaster when now if you get a cut and that gets infected and you get septicemia because nothing will work anymore. Again.
Well, there's a real fear in the medical community about a post-antibiotic future because we know that bacteria evolves. And so if bacteria evolves to the point where our antibiotics no longer work, you could be looking at a future like we had in the past where, you know, you got a cut and the cut got infected and the next thing you know, they're chopping your arm off. So this is very serious. And it's happening here. It's not just happening over somewhere else. It is happening here. I think that when this is said and done, and I have my doubts that this is going to happen because humanity, everybody.
Look at humanity.
But I do think that we should have a come to Jesus moment with how we treat nature and animals. Look at what we are doing. Look at what we have wrought on ourselves by treating animals this way and by destroying nature. We are doing this to ourselves. And I hope that there is that come to Jesus moment. But knowing humanity, I don't have much hope that it is actually going to happen. So
I was just going to say, the other thing I cannot fathom about humanity is that we have such a unique prism into what's coming. We can look to Italy, to France, to Spain, and see literally like it's like looking into our own future. Yeah. And yet the steps that should be urgently being taken here are not.
Now, I want to, before we move on, there's two things that I want to talk about. The first is, just to go back to Trump for a minute, one of the things that I think he's doing, it's very dangerous, is giving Americans possibly false hope. He's telling people that these drugs, that there's a cocktail of chloroquine, which is a malaria drug, and azithromycin, which is an antibiotic, that taken together that, you know, he's giving that it could help treat the coronavirus. We do not know that yet. These drugs have not been approved by the FDA. It was quite frankly shocking to watch the press conference where he said that and then to watch Dr. Fauci come out and say, actually, no, that's not the case. There are drugs in trial, but we should not be giving people this like false sense of, yes, this is definitely going to work. That's really irresponsible of him to do. So I just have to bring that up.
Also, that particular malaria drug will easily kill you in an overdose. The side effects from it are horrible. You can go deaf from taking it. And so we already saw, I don't know if you saw this, but I want to say that in Nigeria, there were already people being brought to the hospital for overdoses because they had heard that to try to protect themselves.
It's really, really irresponsible. And then the other thing that you brought up earlier that I just want to really hit home is that there were a small group of senators, between four senators, five senators, I don't know, who were briefed about the coming crisis with the coronavirus, I think at the end of February.
January 24th.
Oh, in January. And after this briefing, they did not go back to their constituents to warn them about this or speak about this publicly. What they did was they used that secret information to either sell stocks or buy stocks that they knew would enrich themselves when the crisis came. This sounds very much to me like insider trading. And it is also some of the most despicable behavior that I have seen so far during this crisis. How you can be an elected official and get classified information and then use that information, and you know that the information is going to cause people who voted for you suffering. And instead of going to those people and trying to protect them, you use that information to enrich yourself. Those people should be thrown in fucking prison and the key should be thrown away. That is absolutely despicable. I think Senator Barr was one of them. There
Senator
was
Burr. Richard Burr.
B-U-R?
B-U-R-R.
Okay.
He's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
There was a...
This is the guy who held a little private luncheon for his rich
there
friends.
There was a senator from Georgia who did this. This is absolutely despicable, dumpster person behavior. These people should totally be thrown in prison. I don't know if anyone is officially like investigating this, but I can't believe that these people haven't been made to step down. This is absolutely disgusting.
You know whose stock trades I'd also like to see?
The Trump families?
Yes.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that too. What did Donald Trump do? And what did his family do?
What did he sell and when did he sell it?
Yes, I think it's an important question. All right, Miko. Well, we've covered a lot in this opening segment. Anything else you want to add? Or
I just wanted to add one thing that has been very interesting to watch this week, which is the complete 180 in the classic Orwellian tradition of Fox News, where they went from this is a hoax, this is a hoax, this is a hoax, to oh my God, this is so serious, and we've always said it was serious.
Yeah, I think the other thing I know that I was talking about when this is all over, I think the other thing when this is all over is that we cannot allow Donald Trump to rewrite history. We already see him trying to gaslight the nation now. Him saying, oh, I knew it was a pandemic before everyone else, when this was the guy telling everybody that it was a Democratic hoax. I think that we really need to hold people accountable, especially Donald Trump and Fox News, too. They were for weeks, you know, basically toting that line that it wasn't serious and whatever. And then you saw like this total reversal. And I think that sadly, that put the idea in a lot of people's minds that this wasn't serious. I think the other thing that really did a huge disservice in this crisis was the fact that the president, for years since he took office, has been telling his supporters that the news is fake, that, you know, CNN and MSNBC and ABC and CBS, I mean, he attacks all of them, the New York Times, that it's all fake news, that they all lie when he's the one who's lied. And I think that now we're really having a very stunning moment in history where I think a lot of people who have believed him over these trusted news outlets are about to get a real wake-up call.
I agree. I'm still trying to understand how exactly we went from, you know, people suddenly distrusting the news sources that we have trusted for decades in favor of a multi-bankrupt, racist, failed businessman. And I think that the tragedy that's going to unfold comes from Fox News telling its viewers that, first of all, it's not going to come here, it's under control, and then repeatedly saying it's not dangerous if you're young, maybe 1% of the population will have a problem. This is going to be the price of lies.
Yeah, all lies. All right, Miko. Well, with that, what do you say we try some new vegan products?
Let's do it.
All right. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting the new X Burger by Worthington. I don't know what Worthington is, and I don't know what this X Burger is. I just saw this in the market, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's a veggie burger that I've never heard of before. And so we brought it home, and we cooked it up. This suspiciously looks like the Beyond Burger or the Awesome Burger, or you think it's one of those burgers, Miko?
It sure looks and smells like it.
But it's not made from pea protein. This is made from soy, so it is different. So let's try this and see what we think. Ready, Miko?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. You know, this doesn't taste like the awesome burger, and it doesn't taste like the Beyond. It's got a different flavor. I don't know if I like it. What do you think of this?
It tastes to me like the, you know, previous generation's veggie burgers.
Can I
tell you frankly what I... Do you think this is like a slightly fishy flavor to it? It's like a fish steak.
I do get a fishy taste. Why? What do you think? Is there like an omega-3 situation? Did they put like some sort of algae in
maybe,
there?
I mean, if they said this was a fish steak, I would be like, okay.
I don't recommend this. Here's the thing. We have a lot of amazing vegan burgers to choose from this day. There's Beyond, there's Impossible, there's the Awesome, there's, I mean, you can go old school and you know, get a Gardein burger or whatever. There's no need for this. I don't think this tastes very good. And yeah, I didn't have a good reaction to this.
The X is like a no then.
Yeah. Okay. I don't really know if there's much more to say other than, thankfully, we have many more other burgers to choose from, and we can eat that. So if you see the X Burger by Worthington in your supermarket, I'd say skip on that, doll. I wouldn't recommend it.
Agreed.
Okay, Miko, let's do some vegan animal rights news.
Let's do it.
Okay, everybody, it is time for vegan animal rights news. First story. My first story is a follow-up from a couple weeks ago. Do you remember we were talking about those two entrepreneurs from Mexico who developed a vegan leather from cactus?
Yes.
Okay, and they were nominated for this Eco Award. Well, guess what? They won.
Love it.
They won the award. So the company that I'm talking about is called Deserto. And it was started by these two guys in Mexico, Adrian Lopez Velarde and Marte Cesares. And the award that they won was the International Green Product Award. And this was given out in Munich, Germany. They won the award. So congratulations to Deserto. I think this is so cool. I would love to see what this cactus leather looks like. And I want to know when I can buy like a cactus leather jacket or something, because I think that's fabulous. But it just goes to show that we can still have the look and the feel and whatever else of leather, of fur, of wool, of whatever, but not get it from animals. We can make it from plants. We can make it from synthetics. We don't need to be abusing animals in order to do that. So thank you to the two guys who did this, Deserto. Let's see if I hope that eventually we can get this stuff on shelves in our, you know, local retail shop. So we'll see. Okay, next story. Starbucks is responding to the feedback that they have gotten from vegans all over the world about why they continue to upcharge for the vegan milk. Now, this is what they're saying. Starbucks is saying, oh, we have to do that, because when we buy that milk, it's more expensive than the dairy stuff, and so we have to upcharge for it.
Do they have to upcharge 60 cents per fucking serving?
You do not have to upcharge for it, girl. You are a multi-billion dollar company, and you're supposed to have, they made this big announcement like a month or two ago about their sustainability efforts and whatever. This should be part of that. They should actively look at this and incentivize their customers to buy the vegan milk. It is much better for the environment on multiple fronts. Of course, it's better for the animals too. I don't buy this. I think this is bullshit. And I think that we should keep up the pressure to get Starbucks to do the right thing. At the very least, they just shouldn't charge more for it. You know, they should just have it at the same price that they have milk. But I personally think that they should charge more for the dairy stuff. I think they should charge more and call it a carbon tax. Why are you making people pay more for almond milk and oat milk and whatever? I mean, please.
First of all, if you're going to upcharge, then charge for dairy milk too. Put half the, you know what? Let's say you charge 60 cents, charge 30 cents if you want any kind of milk.
That doesn't make any sense. What did you just say?
I'm saying why do some people get a free addition to their coffee And if you want a vegan, you have to pay extra. If you want milk in your coffee, you're going to pay for dairy too.
I think you should pay more for dairy.
Well, let's hope that they drop the surcharge.
All right. Anyway, next story. Snickers, the candy bar.
Is going vegan?
I wish. No. They are cutting their ties with SeaWorld. Apparently, Snickers was like the official candy of SeaWorld. I didn't know that SeaWorld had an official candy, but apparently they did. And they are now cutting ties with SeaWorld after talks with PETA.
Good.
All right. Okay. Now you need to get rid of the fucking milk in your candy bar, girl. How about that? You can still get... Okay, so if you like Snickers, there are those candy bars that you can buy. And one of them is a Snickers. Do you know what it... You know the candy bars I'm talking about?
Yeah. They have,
anyway, if you look up vegan candy bars, you'll find it. So if you want a vegan Snickers, you can have it. But I'm just saying, I do think it's time for some of these candy bars that, you know, have been around for ages to go vegan. There's no reason to have milk in a Snickers bar. I mean, it's fucking, all that stuff is fucking junk anyway. It's just sugar and whatever.
I mean,
there's no need for it.
I just want to point out that in Finland, the most iconic candy company, Fazer, which has been in the business since the 1800s, they took one of their iconic candies that's made with milk chocolate and made it vegan. They didn't just make a vegan version, they made the candy vegan.
Right. It's one. What is it called?
It's the Marianne.
No, but they make those other ones too. The little chocolates that we eat, the hazelnut things. What is that?
Oh, that's right. That's the Fazer Nougat, which is that's an even bigger thing because that.
Now,
no,
you
no
had else. Both of those as a kid. I didn't have that as a kid. I mean, I have them now because you order them. But, I mean, can you taste even a difference?
Not at all.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I'm just saying, if Snickers went vegan, no one would even fucking know.
And Fazer is making, I feel like, a concerted effort. They also make, you know, Europeans like jellies. So they have this other famous candy they've been making since I was a kid, which used to have milk powder, vegan now also.
Why are they doing that, this Finnish company?
I will research and report back, but okay. I think it is probably because of the demand for vegan candy, because it says vegan on the packaging.
And there are, look, Finland has a lot of vegans, and they're very outspoken. So maybe it's just a response to, I mean, who knows? But I do think in an effort to become more sustainable, it would be great to see American companies, like the people who make Snickers and shit, also ditch the milk and whatever. So, okay. Next story. The global vegan meat industry is expected to reach $8.1 billion by 2026.
Wow.
I mean, this is really an exploding industry. I mean, there's so many people looking to get in on the vegan meat, you know, all the hype and whatever. I mean, especially in the last couple of years with Impossible and Beyond, and you see so many people. I mean, even on a smaller entrepreneurial level, I bought this stuff called Mrs. Garbfeld's. Is that what it's called? Garbfeld? I have to look it up. But anyway, it's vegan corned beef. And this woman went on the Shark Tank, and they gave her the money to do whatever they do. And they had it at our local vegan market, Bessie's. We should have had it as a new vegan product, but I thought, I don't know if everyone can get this or whatever. And I will tell you something. This fucking vegan corned beef, which I've never had vegan corned beef before unless I've been at a restaurant where they make it themselves. I've never had store-bought vegan corned beef. This shit was amazing. It was so good. Mrs. Goldfarb, if you're listening, I fucking love your corned beef. It is. I mean, look, it's not cheap. For like 2 pounds, it's like $16. Like, I'm just saying. But if you're like from the East Coast like me and you love like a Reuben sandwich, girl, you got to order this shit online, have it shipped to your house, get the fucking sauerkraut, get the Thousand Island that they sell from Follow Your Heart, get some like, you know, sliced cheese. Like, girl, you will not be sorry. This is going to take you back to your childhood. I was so happy that I found this. This is Garbfeld. I gotta look it up. But it was so good. So I'm just saying, like, I think that there's gonna be a lot of that too. Like, companies that we don't even know about yet, that in the next 5 or 6 years we're gonna see everywhere. So look out for all that stuff. So well done, vegan meat industry. Okay, and finally, my last story of the week. There are now 1,000 vegan restaurants in Japan.
Wow.
This is up 60% in the last 2 years. Well done, Japan. I mean, okay, Miko and I were in Japan a couple years ago. We were actually there to protest the dolphin slaughter in Taiji. And granted, Taiji is more of a rural part of the country, but girl, there was nothing vegan. I mean, we had to pack food. Remember, we went with Sam Simon, that's how the Vegan Ari show really started, was because I was a co-host of Sam Simon's radio show, and then Sam Simon tragically passed away, and we kept the show going, and then we started the Vegan Ari show podcast, kind of grew out of that. But I remember when we went to Taiji, like we brought peanut butter, we brought kale chips, we brought bread, of course we brought wine. I was like, girl, if I'm going to have to see dolphins being slaughtered, I'm going to need to be drunk. Thankfully, the whole time we were there, there were only Blue Cove days, which means there were no kills, which thank God. But I think this is very cool that it seems there's such a new vegan proliferation in Japan. I've always wanted to go to Tokyo. Only never been there. Like I said, only been to this rural part of the country, but this is really, really cool. So what do you say, Miko, after this whole Corona stuff is over, maybe a trip to Japan one
love
of these
it.
Years?
Yes, I'd love that.
All right. Well, there's 1,000 vegan restaurants to choose from. All right. Well, with that, we've come to the end of another show.
No more stories?
That's it. Sorry. I mean, you know, the funny thing is I really didn't think I was going to have much of any stories. Because I think that the coronavirus is really just, and rightfully so, I mean, it's just taken over the news cycle. I don't think anyone's really talking about anything else. But there were some things to talk about. So there you go. Again, I just want to reiterate what I said at the top of the show. I hope all of our listeners are safe and feeling well and staying at home. I know that this is a scary time and we'll get through it. But I think that we really need to hunker down and practice social distancing, not just to keep ourselves safe, but to keep everyone else safe. You know, I read something that said, you know, don't just think of it as like, oh, I'm social distancing so that I won't get sick. You're also social distancing so that you won't get someone else sick. So think of it both ways. But with that said, it is time for us to say until next week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Vegan Ari. Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if we don't hear from you during the week, we will talk to you next weekend. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys, and stay home and stay safe.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy, yeah. I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm safe.